So our first speaker is Russell Neufeld. Until October of last year, Russ was the chief public defender in New York City, and he is currently representing three people facing federal death penalty charges in New York City. Russell Neufeld.
I guess what I'm here to talk about tonight is that we are in the process of seeing the end of the death penalty in the United States. And that's something that I didn't think would happen so quickly as I do now, just a few years ago. In 1995, New York reinstated the death penalty. And for the last 10 years, a lot of people in New York have worked very hard to end it and to try to get rid of it. And now I think pretty much we have. And I think there are lessons from the work that people have done for the over those 10 years that are useful to people in Massachusetts and useful to people in the rest of the country. At the same time, there have been decisions from the United States Supreme Court that also point towards the courts more and more limiting, and perhaps at some point, probably not a George Bush-appointed Supreme Court, but the next Supreme Court actually being in a position to get rid of the death penalty nationally. So let me just talk about a couple of the things that have happened. One of the things that's interesting in New York is that I'm part of a committee that the city bar has on capital punishment in New York City, and we took the recommendations that were made by an Illinois commission last year about how to make a better death penalty. And then we took the recommendations that were made here in Massachusetts by Governor Romney's commission on how you could have a fair death penalty. And we took, people are booing, but it's interesting. I think, I don't know Governor Romney and I'm not from Massachusetts, but it's sort of interesting that on the one hand, he's talking about we should bring back the death penalty or we should have the death penalty in Massachusetts. On the other hand, he created this commission that came up with a whole bunch of very good recommendations, not just for the death penalty, but for criminal justice in general, about things that would make things fairer, things like videotaping interrogations and having sequential lineups and doing a whole lot of things that would actually cut down on the number of innocent people who get convicted of crimes. We had hearings in New York over the last 5 months that the New York State Assembly had on whether or not to bring back the death penalty, and if they were going to bring it back, how. Sue just testified at those hearings. I testified at those hearings. And a lot of prosecutors testified. Four prosecutors testified, four district attorneys from four different New York counties. Two of them were in favor of the death penalty, and two of them were against the death penalty. One of the ones from upstate who was against the death penalty said that he read the report that our city bar committee had put out, and he looked at the Massachusetts recommendations, and he looked at the Illinois recommendations, and he said, if we have to do all that stuff to have the death penalty, it's not worth it. If we have to, like, videotape interrogations and we have to have, like, fair lineups, forget it. It ain't worth it. We don't want it. So it's just, it's interesting how this stuff plays out. You had to be there. You have to, like, to see somebody saying that and to think that you never would have thought that these things would play out in the way they have. I never thought they would play out this way. The strategy that people used in New York to attack the death penalty for 10 years was a combination of doing a whole lot of outreach, meetings like this, a lot of stuff in the media, a lot of stuff on college campuses, a lot of using people who had been exonerated from death row and having the media publicize that. We were lucky in New York that the New York Times has an editorial policy that is very, very much against the death penalty. And what that meant was that every time an innocent person was exonerated anywhere in the world, the Times played it up and there were like seven articles and it was on the front page and it was really a big deal, and that helped a lot. So we had sympathetic media. But we also just kept talking. My brother and his partner, Barry Scheck, started a project called the Innocence Project, and they've now expanded that nationally. They've worked on the exoneration of well over 100 people, many of whom were on death row, many of whom weren't, who they were able to prove through using DNA that the people who had been convicted were falsely convicted. One of the things that Governor Romney apparently talked about was that now that we have DNA testing, you don't have to worry about convicting innocent people. One of the things, in fact, that the DNA testing has shown is that, well, on the one hand, only about 15% of all criminal cases produce DNA evidence. So in the other 85% of the cases, you don't have DNA. In the DNA cases that have resulted in exonerations, the Innocence Project has gone back and looked at those cases and tried to figure out, well, how did these innocent people get convicted? And in 25% of the cases, there were false confessions. That is, that the police were able to get innocent people to confess. It's a really hard thing for people to believe. It's counterintuitive. You don't think it happens. It happens all the time. It happens day in and day out in police precincts all over this country. In over a third of the cases, there were misidentifications. That is, either people just made mistakes and said, oh, that looks like the guy, that's the guy, or else there were suggestive things done to them by the police when they were shown photographs to pick out the photographs. In one of my cases, all we were told before trial was that the witness had picked out my client. When she later testified at trial, she and I cross-examined her about it. She said that all the other people on the page had the word deceased across them except for my client's picture. So police do things that sort of suggest who witnesses should pick out. And there was a significant number of cases where what's called Brady material was withheld by the prosecutors. That is, evidence where the prosecutors know they have evidence that would show that someone is innocent, and they don't turn that evidence over. That happened in a huge number of cases. And it happened in one of our cases. Later we got a reversal because there were, and this was a first-degree murder case in New York where two other people had confessed to the crime. Detective had talked to them, and we were not allowed to have that information. So that conviction was overturned. And that was, again, a client was a very light-skinned Puerto Rican man, same complexion as me, and the perpetrators, all the witnesses said the perpetrators were two dark-skinned black men, and he was still convicted. To the extent that people feel that they could have a foolproof death penalty, that if we could, you know, use DNA and make things fair and do the things that Governor Romney talked about, then we wouldn't have to worry about convicting innocent people. It's just not real, and it doesn't deal with the reality of the criminal justice system and the law enforcement practices that we have. On the other hand, the recommendations that Governor Romney's commission made and that were made by the Illinois Commission are all excellent and should be adopted for, you know, criminal cases, whether you have a death penalty or not. I think it'll be very interesting to see how this will play out in New York, because in Massachusetts, because I think that the that comment that our district attorney made, our upstate district attorney, about it's not worth it if you have to do all these things and make things that fair, it's not worth it to have a death penalty. I think it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out with the law enforcement people here in Massachusetts. The U.S. Supreme Court earlier this month ruled that the juvenile death penalty is unconstitutional, that it's unconstitutional now to execute someone who's less than 18 years old. And the United States, up to that point, was the only country in the whole world, that legally had a juvenile death penalty. There's some other countries that have executed in the past people who were under 18, but they didn't say that they felt good about it. You know, it's like, oh, you know, it's like, oops, we're, you know, sorry. The United States is the only country that had states that said, you know, if you're 11 and you kill somebody, we should kill you. In the decision that Justice Kennedy wrote, and this was also true a year and a half ago when the Supreme Court said that we can't execute mentally retarded people, the standard that was used is looking at the Eighth Amendment bar to cruel and unusual punishment. And the way the court interprets that is the majority of the court interprets that, is that we have evolving standards of decency as civilization evolves. As a society becomes more civilized, our standards of what is decent behavior change. And that at this point in this country, it's no longer okay to kill kids. It's no longer okay to kill retarded people. it's nuts that it took that long to get to that point. I mean, it's like, yeah, but it took that long. The court also, Justice Kennedy's decision, also talked about looking at the rest of the world and looking at what other countries that we consider to be civilized countries, democracies, advanced industrial countries, do in terms of the death penalty. And that was a lot of the decision. That was one of the four cornerstones of the decision about why saying that evolving standards of decency, not just here but in the world, say that you can't execute children. Well, what's happening in the world is that the rest of the world is in the process of outlawing the death penalty altogether. So one of the things that will continue to happen is there'll be pressure on the United States to get rid of the death penalty, international pressure from the EU, from individual countries, from organizations within the United Nations. And that, 110 years ago, there was tremendous international pressure to end lynching in the United States. And that campaign to end lynching internationally is one of the things that led to the death penalty being used more and more, because that was how they cleaned up their act. If you can't lynch people, you know, if we do it legally, it won't look so bad. And now, you know, 100 years later, they're being pushed again to just stop this whole insanity. And it's pretty amazing. The New York Times took a poll last month that showed that only 34% of the people in New York State now support the death penalty. That's statewide, 34%. And that is a sea change from 1995 when Governor Pataki got elected, and one of the things he got elected on was the death penalty. So it feels like meetings like this are small, and there's only, I don't know how many of us there are here. There's a lot of people. But, you know, it feels like, gee, how do you change the minds of millions of people on something like this? And I think that because of the work that people have done nationally, the international pressure, and the work that we did locally in New York, coordinating a legal strategy with a political strategy really has changed the minds of most people. So we no longer in New York have majority support or anywhere near majority support for the death penalty. I think that'll happen here. And it'll happen here enough, probably in a timely enough way, so you won't even have to get rid of it because you won't have it in the first place. You can stop it. And gradually, I think we'll be in a position to get rid of it in the country as a whole. Thank you.